This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
And here we go. I hope you're hungry for nothing.
Hello and welcome to the Undercut Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jesse Billington, and we're back to review the 10th race of the Formula One 2024 season. We're over a third of the way through now. The Spanish Grand Prix it is. And to do this, I'm joined by Timo Albus Daly and Ellie Mae Taylor. How are you both?
Doing quite well, thank you. I managed to strategically play out a perfect weekend of motorsport with all the different motorsport series that we talked about in the Barcelona preview, and I managed to get bang, 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 bang. So it worked out quite nicely, although it did go on for quite a while yesterday. IndyCar going on until nearly 2 a.m. It was at the exact point that I was trying to calculate how long the race would go if there weren't any major accidents that Luca Giotto then binned it. And I thought, you bastard.
Did you, I'm taking it you didn't stay up and watch the NASCAR afterwards then?
Did Lord know. I went to bed.
A smart move.
The highlights in the morning.
Fair enough. Ellie Mae, did you watch any multitudes of motorsport across the weekend?
Hopefully Formula One.
I can't even remember what I did on the weekend.
Off to a strong
50-50
start.
50-50 on the Formula One.
Yeah.
Watched Formula One.
Okay.
Remember that? Had Lola next to me the whole time.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, she's been getting into it recently. She watched, what was the race before that? Canada. She watched all of that too.
Speaking of Lola, have you seen the Lola Yamaha Formula E car? The livery on that looks pretty good, I have to say. Formula E is the place to be if you want brightly coloured liveries. That blue and yellow is chef's kiss.
She's been working hard on that.
She should be proud of her design. Anyway, we're getting sidetracked. We haven't even gotten into the news yet, and we'll jump straight in then. With the big news from the Grand Prix across the weekend was Flavio Briatore returning to Formula One at Alpine. Timo, take it away.
Yes, the 74-year-old is taking on the role as executive advisor for their F1 division, and he will be quote-unquote predominantly focusing on top-level areas of the team, which is interesting because I wasn't quite sure they had those. But this does include scouting top talents and providing insights on the driver market, challenging the existing project by assessing the current structure, and advising on some strategic matters within the sport. So it's a little suitably vague and basically... do what you want, as little or as much of you want, and we'll give you a paycheck at the end of the day.
Although I would argue that somewhat challenging the existing project by assessing the current structure is quite a good thing for Alpine, because it means
anyone and everyone can do that.
Yeah.
What I found quite interesting about all of this, though, was, first of all, how Formula One itself reported the news. I don't know if they've changed this, but I screenshotted and brought the quote just in case they decided to change it later. Because see if you can and find out what what's missing here. So Briatore added more titles with Fernando Alonso in the mid-noughties before vacating his position in 2009 and taking some time out of F1. No reasoning at all given as to why that might have been.
It might have been to be a doting father and look after the child that he had with Heidi Klum.
It wasn't. And I just feel like as this is an F1 podcast and people have come a long way in recent years in terms of becoming new fans through Drive to Survive, they may not know who he actually is and why he's claiming to be relevant anyway for Alpine and why Alpine think it's a good idea bringing back on. And while I'm not sure why they think it's a good idea, I find it interesting that Yeah, there's a lot in his backstory, let's say. I mean, obviously, that we're alluding to, first of all, there is that he was forced to resign from Alpine when it was Renault back in 2009, following the reveal that he basically orchestrated the fixing of the 2008 Singapore Grand Prix, where he convinced Nelson Piquet Jr. to crash deliberately in a bid to help his teammate Alonso at the time to win the Grand Prix, which he then did, Alonso having no knowledge of this. Briatore was then banned by the FIA after he was found guilty of this, but Briatore denied his involvement and in 2010 was somehow able to get his life ban overturned thanks to a high court in France. But this wasn't his first controversy, as he was also convicted of fraud in Italy back in the 1980s. His time at Benetton was overshadowed somewhat in 1994 as well, when the team's car was found to have illegal traction control software in a concealed menu system. The team were not penalised as it couldn't be proven that had been used, but suitably fishy nonetheless, and away from motorsport, just in case this wasn't making you scratch your chin a little bit and wonder already. He was arrested after pulling off a number of confidence scams, I believe they're called, in Italy back in, I think, the 80s this was, and he was sentenced to 4.5 years in prison. He managed to get it reduced to 14 months, and then fled the country and lived in exile, somehow then being put in charge of the Benetton fashion brand in the US, thanks to his acquaintance with Luciano Benetton, the founder of Benetton. And when he returned to the EU, somehow got his convictions quashed via amnesty, which raises a few question marks. And then after Crashgate in 2009, when he, what was it, F1 said, vacating his position, taking time out of F1, his yacht was seized by the Italian government over tax evasion. So, as you can tell, it's a very stand-up guy and absolutely squeaky clean. And I know that very rarely anyone's perfectly squeaky clean in motorsport, but you'd think you could find someone at Alpine that is a little bit less mucky to come and help you out with advising your team, especially when you just look at all of this and think, really? This is your new savior?
It's an interesting one. I think on the traction control one, I think it was something that actually Senna pointed out because he could hear the
Well, yeah.
car's sort of throttle cutting in and out through corners in a way that was
And
uncommon.
there was the small interesting thing in Brazil, I think it was, of the fuel issue there, which they ended up using a fuel that burned a little bit slower or quicker, I think, therefore making it lighter, therefore they could gain advantage during the race. But oh, we didn't know about that. So it's completely new to us. Damn, they figured it out.
Yeah, see, I maybe this maybe my mind is filling in things, but I recall there being an early version of that release from Formula One, which detailed Crashgate in the article, which was then suddenly changed. I
It's
vague.
curious because the article I saw was 13 minutes ago published from Fresh from the News, because I've seen it on social media and thought, no, went to my phone and oh yes.
So when you
So
screenshotted it, it was 13 minutes old.
it was pretty fresh. It was around there, yeah. No more
Okay,
than half
because
an hour at the absolute most.
I remember certainly looking at it when the news dropped, because I remember screenshotting it and sending it to the group chat. Funnily enough, the group chat for this podcast is named The Interesting Sex Life of Flavio Briatore. And I remember sending it to the group chat, the original notification of it in sort of an excited fit, and then reading certainly one or two of the stories. And I must have gotten confused as to which one actually detailed Crashgate, but if it was the F1 release but then later deleted it, that's quite
It would
interesting.
just make it make more sense to
Keep it in.
add it in if
Yeah.
you don't have it in the first place, rather than have it and remove it as if, oh yes, we're not meant to talk about that
Should
for
have mentioned
some
that.
reason.
But the interesting thing was Flav was on the grid at the start of the race, and Martin Brundle asked him, or was it not Martin Brundle? It was one of the pundits
Friends.
for across the weekend. Yeah, asked him, what do you have to say to people who are critical of your return? And he simply said, fuck them.
Oh, that was Craig Slater. I thought you
Yes, yeah.
were talking about when they then interviewed him on the grid leading up to the race, Martin Brundle's usual segment, and he was literally like, let me settle in first. I think he basically doesn't, he doesn't even know what he's doing there.
Well, that's not the first time, considering what his education was like.
Well, no, I'd say he knows exactly what he's doing. The problem is it's usually criminal. That's probably a more fair statement to make about Flavio Briatore.
I did think it was then now ironic that when Netflix were following Alpine in Drive to Survive the last season, when they cut to Cannes Festival the first famous person they showed was Heidi Klum. And I don't think they knew what they were doing.
But I think the fun part of Netflix for next season will be the fact that they get to do a whole other Alpine episode and they get to do Crashgate as part of that now because the territory's returned and they get to go, ooh, previously on, before we even had this show, look what happened.
Oh, yeah, they're going to dig out the archive footage and there'll be an interview with Nelson Piquet Jr. and that will be fun. Anyway, we'll move on from sort of speculating as to what Flavio Briatore's job is to speculating a few of the driver moves coming up. Because, of course, everything this season is waiting on Carlos Sainz to say yes to someone. And that's been made a bit more complicated by Alpine going, oh, yeah, we're talking to Sainz. And everyone's going, well, where the hell is he going? But one person who we do very reportedly know where he's going is Logan Sargeant, who is joining Prema and their new IndyCar team for the 2025 season, which makes sense given that Williams are heavily courting Carlos Sainz at the moment. Bottas suggested in an interview in Spain that the day approaches for Sainz's announcement, which all the other seats seem to really be hinging on at the moment. One of the interesting things is Liam Lawson has reportedly got a seat, and one of the rumours, this is from, reports from Sergio Rodriguez, one of the paddock reporters, suggests that it's next to Nico Hülkenberg, which would suggest he's going to Audi, which is quite the move for Liam Lawson, but then again, Red Bull don't really seem to want to put him anywhere beyond occasionally in TikToks. Ollie Bearman is basically at Haas at the moment, and reportedly Ocon could be heading there. Zhou is set to be moving to Alpine, finally joining the team whose junior academy he was once a part of. Whether that would be next to Gasly or whether that would be next to Jack Doohan, whose work in the sim has been crucial to turning around the car so far this season, or possibly even Mick Schumacher, who raced for the team at Le Mans and is set to enjoy a private test in the last car soon. Meanwhile, the rumour mill churns further to figure out who's putting an engine in the back of the Alpine. Reports suggest it's not going to be Renault for much longer. Do they go Ferrari? Do they go Mercedes or Honda? It seems unlikely, however, if they'd be getting in on the RB Ford deal. So it's a very interesting time when it comes to trying to figure out what's all going to happen the moment Carlos Sainz basically pulls the stick out from the bottom of the pile and it all collapses into its allocated seats. So what do we think? Which of those sounds the most logical? Which ones do we think is going to be the way it falls? Or is it too early to even get close to speculating in your mind?
I'm just going to wait until we actually get something to happen.
Yeah, I'd like to know who your sources are.
Sergio Rodriguez, a pit lane reporter, and a couple of others on Twitter that sort of magazines and newspapers that are picking up from sort of rumour that seems to be sort of leaking out the back doors of teams, essentially. But beyond that, it's just sort of until an official release comes out, you're left with sort of one person who's taken off their official T-shirt from a team going, by the way.
I'm just so bored of rumours at the moment with everything. I mean, there's so much stuff this year from the very start that just comes to nothing. And it's the news is interesting by itself. You look at Hamilton moving to Ferrari. Interesting, so much to go with there. And is in theory, well, it's actually the domino that set all this in motion. I don't need to bother speculating over the rest of it because it's going to be interesting when it comes. So I'd rather just wait.
I mean, Magnussen, didn't he? He said in the driver's press conference as well that Sainz is that cork in the bottle that currently is preventing silly season at the moment. So, yeah. I mean, once he announces where he's going, then the chaos will
then
be...
Then I think it would be hilarious if we didn't find out anything else for another 2 months.
Just that would probably
one announcement,
be the
nothing
way
else happens.
That would probably be the
we
way...
We have all of the summer break silent and we get to Zandvoort and then everything starts going to shit again.
All of my speculation would go up in smoke, much like the McLaren motorhome did this weekend. And yeah, great. Thank you. I was very pleased with that one. Zach Brown was reportedly seen heading inside with a waste paper bin, some matches, and what looked like a series of IndyCar contracts, but we shan't comment further on that at this point in time. Although there was a great point where the Spanish firefighters turned up and were simply drawing on the side of the Alpine motorhome, their sort of strategy, sort of what to tackle next, what was going to be the process. And one of the lines written onto the side of the Alpine motorhome was, extinguish fire. And like, that to me seems like step one if you're a firefighter in that scenario is put the fire out. Although
it also seems very appropriate for that to be on Alpine's
motorhome. Your only purpose is to sit here and just sort of be our whiteboard while we're working.
No, in terms of strategy, they're going to be like, what do we do today? Well, we start the race.
We turn the car on and put tyres on it and some fuel in it, and we'll go from there. Sort of starting with the absolute building blocks. But yeah, it that was some excitement before the racing had even started. But we've got some Grand Prix.
It's ironic as well that it's Spain. I mean, if Lando Norris had won and there had been a fire at McLaren.
If his car had somehow set itself on fire in the garage out of surprise, yeah, sort of very Maldonado-esque. But anyway, we've got some Spanish Grand Prix fun facts. Who wants to run through those?
Might as well take that, because despite its best intentions, the Grand Prix did have some interesting elements to it, one which being Hamilton's podium here makes it his 18th consecutive year in Formula 1 with at least one podium. And Carlos Sainz has scored every single Spanish Grand Prix he's competed in, which, while not a win yet, as he would have quite liked to be, because that's going to be in a Williams next year, is quite good for him. So I think that's pretty decent.
It's a good sign of consistency from Sainz.
Yeah, neither Ferrari driver have got a podium at Spain, have they?
No. It's quite a strange one to think about, but I think, yeah, that makes the last Ferrari driver to podium there was probably Vettel, I'd assume.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Yeah, and their last win, Fernando?
Yes.
Probably Alonso, which would have been his last win.
2012, yeah. Which is a lot of strange details. Anyway, we'll jump into our review of the actual Grand Prix itself, and we'll kick off with the team at the front of the championship for the moment, Red Bull. And team, I'll let you crack into this one first.
Yeah, for me, not too much as I hear. Verstappen's victory never looked in doubt, really, once he was past Russell. It was a clean race of Perez at least this time round, but everyone does need a bit more from him. According to Perez, it was a bit difficult to pass, and he was sliding around a lot, which is interesting. And does remind me a little bit of the dominant Mercedes when it would hit traffic. I was thinking Spain in particular, because he was a bit down the order of 1 year there, and Bottas ahead of him is having trouble even getting up to him at that point. Needed Bottas to move aside a little bit. So it was interesting how these things kind of correlate. And Perez saying he can't balance the car through all the different levels of speed at the moment, which is why he's having a bit of an issue. So it's an interesting one, because I think he's definitely done the first part of what he needs to do before some break, which is just have a clean race. And while it's not in a position where we want him to be, or he wants him to be rather, it's at least a step in the right direction. And hopefully Austria clean, it's their home circuit, they have all the points available in some respects, so he can really start to claw things back a bit for himself. And then Silverstone, hopefully he can do something there, although that is always quite a crazy race, so who knows what's going to happen there. But cautiously optimistic for him. But that's me with a lot of drivers and teams this weekend.
He had a different strategy, didn't he? He went for the three stop, which if you look at 2021, that's how Hamilton got the win over Verstappen. So I kind of understand what they were doing. It just didn't seem to pan out at all. He was just, I don't know, he just wasn't there. He wasn't in the fight with the others, whilst sort of with Max, whilst everyone else around him is seemingly sort of feeling the pressure of the current situation of late, whereby, you know, you sort of have four teams that could potentially win each race at the minute. Max seems very cool under the pressure, and so his team around him, really. They had all the answers this weekend, I think, to Lando and somewhat George's questions as well. And they didn't seemingly compromise or change their strategy to make sure they were sort of closing any threats. They almost sort of, it's almost, they kind of went in with that confidence that they always kind of had it.
Yeah, there was this sort of understanding that they were sort of going in with essentially the race win in hand. I think it was a bit of an uphill battle when McLaren showed up with a bit of pace. I think for me, it's great to see Verstappen being pushed for his wins again, actually. And he is so ruthlessly competent. And this is sort of becoming a bit more of a showcase of his finesse rather than his outright pace. And I think actually forcing him to drive it is quite interesting. Perez was, for me, still a bit lackluster, but better. And it's in a car that really ought to be a bit further up. However, this is another example of what a difference the driver makes in a slightly ropey chassis. And I think a lot of people are coming to the conclusion that maybe the McLaren is the fastest car in the field at the moment, but maybe Norris isn't able to get the most from it, whereas Verstappen is in the second fastest car, but is able to get all of it from it and then some. So it's, we're sort of reaching a teetering point between sort of the absolute evolution of the two chassis. And this is where the real talking point of which driver is better starts to come into play a lot more.
I think it's very track dependent and strategy dependent as well.
There's certainly a reliance on it being a circuit that the McLaren or Red Bull favours, and one where they can get sort of a good release from tighter corners. You look at some of the tight turns from Miami, and that was where, certainly against a damaged Red Bull, the McLaren was able to romp ahead. And you look at things like Imola, where it's got a variety of chicanes. Again, you've got these tighter, slower turns where the McLaren is able to get a better release from it. Spain is a bit more fast, a bit more flowing for the large part, especially with that revised final section. And that's where the Red Bull just had the advantage this weekend. So it's not relying so much on that release from tighter corners. It's able to carry its speed a lot better. So we're sort of reaching a tipping point. It's going to be interesting to see which way it goes as the developments go on, and equally as teams better understand the developments they bring in. We'll move then from Red Bull to the team that is currently just about edging them for second place, which is Ferrari. And well, this was a bit of a damage limitation race for them, wasn't it, Timo?
Very much so. I mean, that's what they needed to do after Canada. And it was a shame they weren't a bit further up there. They weren't fully understanding everything that was going on with the car from the sounds of it. But it just seemed more a frustrating race for them again. And that would really show during the race between the two of them how hard they were racing, reactions between the two of them on how much they were racing each other. And Sainz versus Hamilton again reminded me of when he went up against Piastri in Miami, where he's just not focusing on the race itself and talking that way. He's doing it on the radio, and it's not helpful. I think he just needs to, I don't know if it's the stuff going on off track that's bothering him. I wouldn't have thought that it would be, because they're all pretty good at compartmentalizing that sort of thing. But for me, that Sainz versus Hamilton thing was exactly the same, pretty much as the Sainz v. Leclerc stuff that happened earlier on the race. How is it fine when it's your teammate, who arguably you should have more of a problem with, than if it's going to be Hamilton? And I don't know. It was a fight he wasn't really going to be winning anyway. So it was good to put up as much of a fight as he did, but it wasn't going to happen. And I think he just needed to focus on what he was doing there and maximize his race, like other drivers elsewhere in the field knew that they weren't going to be able to do X, Y, or Z. So they just did the best they can with what they had and focused on that instead of trying to blame something else for it.
They let tensions run high in the team this weekend, I think, and that didn't really help their situation. Leclerc getting quite agitated in particular. Their pace was okay, but it wasn't matching Mercedes, Verstappen, and what Norris could do. And they didn't really have an answer to that either.
Yeah, they were struggling to really fight with much in the field. They're sort of in a race of their own, really. Even the Mercedes were up the road from them. So it was just sort of a bit of an inter-team battle. And I had hope for the Scuderia this weekend, as my fantasy teams will tell as we get to that point in the podcast. And I hope they aren't at risk of being outdeveloped by McLaren and possibly even Mercedes. The inter-team clashes of the pressure mounts aren't a good forecast for the way this is looking, and I think it's only going to get worse as the year rolls on. Hopefully, the Fred Vasseur-led sort of reformed team is able to steer that better.
The thing is they also have to remember that if they want to try and get Red Bull in the constructors, they need to work together. And at the minute, they're not.
No.
And I think that's what makes it such a good compare and contrast with Mercedes this weekend, because they had such a good weekend as they worked together to get back to the top. They had another P3, P4 finish, swapped round. And yeah, there was some hard fighting at times, but it was good, clean racing. they didn't kind of muck about with any of it. And Russell had a phenomenal start. He was saying he was practicing on the laps that they would do out of the garage to go on formation, to go on the grid at the start. Then they go around a bit again and do that a few times. He just kept testing how late can I break here, try and just see what I can do here at the start. And yeah, he probably wasn't going to win that battle, but it throws a spanner in the works for Red Bull and McLaren, because they're like, do we have to take you seriously now? You're not part of the plans here. And so it's just great to see that. And it's a shame that they couldn't get both drivers on the podium, right? Because they both really deserved that P3. So it would have been nice to see some drama if Norris had got up to the snap and a bit sooner and actually been able to do something about it. Then they could have actually maybe had a tussle, and who knows, maybe you could have ended up with a Mercedes 1-2 after that, and it would have been well deserved because they're putting in the absolute maximum there. So I find that really interesting, and I wonder how that dynamic is going to change next year with whoever's next to Russell, and then Leclerc with Hamilton having someone who is not on the same level as Leclerc. Hamilton's obviously much better driver, but Leclerc's not exactly a rookie or an inexperienced, and I wonder how they'll be able to complement each other in comparison to Leclerc and Sainz, where we've had debates on who's the number one driver there. It depends very much from race to race in some regards, so that's going to be interesting to see, and how that kind of builds up the rest of Ferrari moving forward.
Ferrari play their number one driver by who's sort of quicker going into the weekend and through practice and qualifying. That seems to be the way they do it. And Leclerc has incredible one lap pace, which seems to be his sort of slight advantage over Sainz this season. But when it comes to sort of the constructors' fight, this is the first weekend in a little while that Red Bull have actually outscored Ferrari or Mercedes or McLaren. That wasn't by a great deal. It's only about sort of 6 points. They scored more than the next team. But this proves that sort of getting Perez back up there, even if it's into sort of lower echelons of the points, is just what they need to try and keep their constructors' hope alive. It's a big part of the sort of race through the season is the constructors. It is this basically one half of the championship. And I think Ferrari, Mercedes, and McLaren have sort of played a very strong shot across the bowels of Red Bull and made them sort of sit up and put this fire under Perez. But Mercedes did a great deal of that this weekend, and I think Timo, you're right in saying it was a very good weekend as they work their way back to the top.
It was, I think, a really promising weekend for them. Their pace drifted a little in qualifying. They couldn't quite match sort of Lando and Max, but they were both a lot more on it. They're finally starting to realize where they went wrong with the car and how to fix it. Obviously, Russell struggled a little towards the end on the hard tyre, which wasn't quite the right strategy call, but they were able to negate any threat from the Ferraris, like we said, behind, and they put Ozzy Hamilton on the different tyre compound, so he at least could be that bit more comfortable. The one thing that really annoyed me was, it's kind of just insignificant, but it annoyed me, is they put a graphic up that said, if George Russell was on a different strategy, he'd be in P3 right now.
They did that for Lewis as well, and I just thought that's most useless information.
Yeah.
Because he didn't do it.
What, like, and of course he was in P3, but he was on the wrong tyre, and so his teammate went past him because he was on the right tyre. Of course, if Russell was on the soft like Hamilton, he would still be in P3. I just thought, what a stupid thing to put up.
It was a very strange AWS. One from AWS, yeah. But I think overall for me, for Mercedes, I'm not a huge Mercedes fan. I've always sort of had allegiances elsewhere, but I'm genuinely excited to see them picking up the pace and making this a four-way fight at the top. It's really solid works and steadily improving to the point where they also understand the car. This has been a huge thing, is certainly from Lewis's side of the garage, is this lack of understanding of the mechanics and the behaviour of the car. Lewis has gotten to grips with it. Admittedly, it's quite late in this car's iteration, but sort of find that the trick is not to overdrive it. It's not like the old aero style of car or the old early turbo hybrids where you could just sort of brutalize them into working. It's a car you've got to be a lot more flowing with, and that's potentially been sort of Verstappen's key, is the fact that he has a very sort of flowing sort of get it turned in and then put the power down style, as opposed to sort of absolutely hammer it into the turn, pile on the steering lock and then pile on the throttle and sort of unwind it from there. It's never been sort of a car set up for that. And now I think Lewis has sort of found the fine balance of it. I think you'll have understood that from early on. He's Lewis Hamilton. Of course, he understands how to drive the car, but the nuance of it has been one that's been so at odds with his personal style that it's taken a little while for him to really find it. But now seeing him back on that and back on form, is really, really exciting. And again, excellent start from Russell, but against Verstappen, his overall race just proved to be a day late and a dollar short. It wasn't quite enough to keep up with the Red Bull ahead of him, but it was good.
This is what I wanted from Lando earlier in the season, though. It's this kind of thing of, I'm probably not going to win this, but you've got to try. And Lando never seemed willing to cry. He just waits until we've got the car there. It was like, yeah, but you never know what's going to happen at a Grand Prix. What if you get past and there's a massive shunt behind you? You're leading a Grand Prix that you could have been caught up in the mess of earlier. You've got to take these chances. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But you led a race. That's fun. It's good for the sponsors. It's good for the team morale. You show that you're leading the race. That's what you want. You want to go racing and you want to try something. So yeah, maybe it doesn't work, but at least you tried something.
Well, there's been sort of the online nickname of Lando for a long time was Lando No Wins. And now it's sort of become Lando Nor If. And I think it's, as much as I don't like it for being a sort of derogatory nickname, it's also painfully rooted in a bit of truth. He always seems to be a little too sort of hesitant at times. And we saw a very different side to Russell with that huge send around the outside, because usually that's not a George Russell move, unless it's into the side of Bottas. He usually goes for very much the sort of calm, metered sort of, we'll take this race turn by turn as it comes. Whereas he went, there's a gap there, I'm going for it. And
we saw this explained from him last year with Verstappen. He was never going to beat him, but he made a meal out of making sure that Verstappen was going to earn that win out of him. So I quite like that we get that there. And a kind of a contrast, Lando getting pole position, getting second place, somehow only a second pole position. Quite amused that he said it's my best one. I'm like, well, yeah, you've only got two now, mate. It's not exactly a big debate on that one. It's 50-50.
Yeah, this or Sochi 21? 21,
yeah.
Yeah.
2021. I did like his ambition, but he left it a bit too late to go after that. And kind of, yeah, with that whole thing of, are we fighting for first or third? Well, if you're going to fight first, get on with it. And you kind of left it a bit too late. And then after the race saying, well, we had the quickest car this week, we should have won. It's like, yeah, but you didn't.
Yeah.
So, and who've you got to blame? It's not the team, because they did a very nice job with you with win the pits and everything. So it's just, again, you need that slightly calmer head there. And like, you bunged it at the start, and that's why you lost it. And you didn't push enough towards the end for whatever reason. Maybe it was the tyres, maybe it was the strategy, whatever. But I still feel like it's good for him that he's got that first win, but he needs to build now. What we saw from him in Imola was more like it. This looked similar, but was not the same thing. On the other side of the garage, another decent drive from Piastri, just not quite there yet. But again, for a second season in a team that is like this, he's doing a pretty damn good job. And he's up there fighting Ferraris, Red Bulls, Mercedes, and his teammate, who are all so much more experienced than him in Formula One. The fact that he's where he is not too shabby. So I'm still not even remotely worried about him.
Mm-hmm. The thing to consider with Piastri as well is the spread of pace across that top field, especially when you look at the qualifying. Is it sort of 1 or 2 tenths dividing the top six? So if you're getting into that window, you're within touching distance of pole. It's not a huge gap of pace that you're sort of leaving on the table. So it's great. I think he still needs to work on tyre wear. I sort of alluded at it with a bit of a joke in the preview, but Spain is also a hard one to sort of get to grips with. That it is a very aggressive surface. So pardon the pun, I'll let it slide. But yeah, overall, great team performance, and the team are honing in what they need to do to chase down Verstappen. And yeah, overall, I think you've said what needs to be said on Norris, really. I think you fair cop with that one.
Then I will go and slightly disagree. Because, I mean, first of all, in terms of qualifying, I thought it was a very clever move from Norris to get a tow from one of the Alpines on his last Q3 lap to help him get pole, especially as Red Bull that tried to do the same with Perez giving a tow to Max. I see what they were doing when they were trying to let Norris go long to then have more tyre to get Max at the end. It didn't quite work out. Norris, I think, had too much work to do in trying to overtake others and then catch up to Max. I appreciate what they at least tried to do something different, but I think Max was managing his pace enough that he could push it if Lando was getting too near. And I just don't think McLaren, even though they tried, and they tried with a different strategy and all of that, I just don't think they had enough in it for them to catch Max.
No, I think like you were saying earlier, Jesse Verstappen is just one of the drivers where, oh, you're challenging me a little bit. I better just put a little bit more effort in then and I'll be safe. And it's just, yeah, you even if you get to me, you still have to get past me. And that's a whole different equation. And then he just turns the wick up a little bit because he's just been kind of settling into his rhythm of being quite comfortable in that car at this point. So even if they had been able to get there, it might not have been enough anyway. But yeah, like you say, I appreciate the ambition that they tried there because, like Russell, you've got to try even if it doesn't work because it makes it slightly more interesting and you'd rather have a 2 second gap to the guy in front than a 20 second gap and at least show that you can whittle that down a bit.
Yeah, it's, I think, just sort of, I just need that extra sort of 10% from Norris to really go for it on those off occasions. We'll move from.
I don't think he left anything on the table this weekend. I think he did really push.
I think the places he left it off the table was afterwards when he was talking about it, the reasoning for it, and all this sort of thing. It was kind of like, yeah, we're not criticizing you for the ambitiousness and for not making it happen. It's the why it didn't happen. It's kind of the look. It's not you shouldn't just have one because you have the bus car. You need to put it all together and you need to look at the race start. That's where you lost it. You're still not going to be there. You still haven't got the racecraft there because a little bit like Russell when he moved over to Mercedes the first time, like, oh, we don't actually know what to expect from you in a car because we've only seen you in a competitive car once. So what does Lando Norris actually do when he goes to fight someone? We've only seen it a few times, really, and that's going to be very different when it's actually Verstappen you're fighting.
Yeah, the sort of on the edge properly battling Lando is a very different one to Lando scrapping for the occasional third.
But it's a move in the right direction. I'll level with you on that one.
Yeah. We'll move from one Mercedes-powered team to the next, and we'll go for Aston Martin, and they are really struggling to keep up the development war with those around them. The car has been slipping backwards through the field. Alonso bagged points this weekend. I don't think Stroll did. It's just a bit.
Well, Alonso summed it up pretty nicely by saying we deserve not to score points.
Yeah, Alonso did worse than Stroll, I'm pretty sure.
Checks notes, I could be wrong. I am on many occasions. Alonso, no points. Stroll, no points. So I'll check the finishing order then. Stroll, 14th. Alonso, 12th.
Ah, okay then. But
they might have qualified the other way around.
That might be it.
Checks other set of notes. Alonso, 10th. Stroll, 14th. No.
Either way, he summed it up well by saying we deserve not to score points this weekend. He was citing like a downforce with the car at this circuit, and he thinks the next two Grand Prix would also be frustrating due to the nature of the tracks, and Stroll's not going to be much help. So Alonso is kind of out there fighting for himself as always there, and it was a shame he couldn't do a bit more in Spain, but they're just going backwards. He knows he accepts it, but he's not going to give up anytime soon. He signed the extension with the team. He's in this for the long haul, so he's just, I think, going to channel that inner samurai that we saw back in Bahrain of, this isn't going to be around for us, so I'm going to do the best I can with what I've got, and we'll leave it at that and move on to the next race, and maybe we can do something there.
I mean, they have the advantage of being on 44 points. Minardi, RB, Toro Rosso are on 20, Haas are on 7, and Aston Martin on 58, Minardi 28, Alpine 8, Haas 7. So they're sort of far enough away from the rest of the field that they're comfortable for the moment, but equally they have no hope in hell of catching Mercedes, who are nearly 100 points ahead of them. So it's sort of a foregone conclusion for them at this point. And if RB get back on their feet after a bit of a wet weekend, they might start to cause headaches for Aston Martin.
Their pace wasn't great. They really, really struggled with their tyre degradation. That's what really got them this weekend. And I don't know, I honestly don't know what's happened to Aston Martin. They just haven't, I don't know, had the upgrades. They haven't been able to just...
So they've had the upgrades, the jet upgrades just haven't done nothing. Except make it slightly worse. So they're just going to have to get back to the drawing board. I think in a similar way to Minardi, they're going to have to just... Either sometime this week they're going to have to decide that they're going to continue doing this for the triple header and just see what how far they can push it, or depending if they get any answers or not, go, right, we'll just revert back to whenever the last time this car worked, i.e. last year, and go from and try and factory reset it as much as we can and go from there and try and move it over a bit. But yeah, it was the same with Minardi because it was an absolute shambles from them, really, which is a shame after Canada with double points. At least Ricciardo was able to move up the order a bit. I mean, it wasn't much, but at least there was some progress there. And not the best way you want to celebrate your 250th Grand Prix if you are Ricciardo, but he kind of didn't bemoan it. He just kind of took it on the chin and went, it's not the result we're happy with. But with the package we had, we couldn't have expected much else, which just shows that, yeah, we tried something. We've got to learn a little bit more. Hopefully we can before Austria to decide, like I said before, Aston Martin, do we continue down this path or do we try and revert back to type a little bit? And also raise the interesting point of, like, if you had this 10 years ago, it wouldn't have been as consequential, but a bad day these days pays more of a price than it used to because of the field spread being what it is now. On the other side of that, you kind of had a little bit of old Yuki coming out because he was blaming the car for his weekend and also having his speeding the pit lane penalty on top of that didn't help things. And it was a shame that he's been doing well this season so that when he did badly, he did very, very badly. And you kind of would have hoped that, like Ricciardo, not necessarily very far up on the grid by the end of it, but you'd have hoped maybe one or two spots further for him, they'd be at least next to each other, considering how bedded in he is into that team. So it was kind of a little bit like Norris for me with Yuki, where it was like you're focusing on the wrong things and you're trying to blame the wrong things for why this didn't work out for you. Just take a chill pill and go again in Austria.
I want to jump back quickly to Aston Martin, because we said they've sort of fallen back or gone backwards, but their development hasn't. If you look at their qualifying times last year at Spain, in relatively similar conditions, Alonso 1:13.507 and Stroll 1:12.994. You look at their times this year, didn't make it far through the sort of qualifying process. Alonso 1:12.128 and Stroll 1:12.372. So both were quicker this year round, which suggests that potentially the car is quicker, but the problem is the teams around them have simply made those steps forward better and further. And I think that, for me, is the problem for Aston Martin is the development more. Yes, they're developing, but those around them are developing a lot faster than they seem to be able to. And Minardi, on some weekends, does seem to be one of those teams. They brought upgrades this weekend, but clearly didn't really understand them, or the upgrades didn't actuate as expected. Maybe the weather conditions weren't right, the track was too aggressive. Something wasn't clicking for them, and it was unfortunate because it sort of spoiled a fairly good sort of build-up of energy and momentum they had going, certainly with Ricciardo's strong qualifying in Canada, the fact that they were now sort of regularly getting up at their cars up into the top 10. This weekend just feels like a bit of a stumbling block, and it's going to be interesting to see how well they recover that emotionally and productively going into Austria, a track where previously they have also run fairly well, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I know Canada and Spain are very different circuits, but yeah, to go from the highs of Canada with good, decent pace from both drivers to both struggling for any kind of pace at Spain is torrid. The only positive I can take away from their weekend is that the drivers were kind of close to each other on pace, so that hopefully means that Ricciardo is now more up to scratch with the car. But I think Ricciardo was a lot more comfortable with the car this weekend, whilst Yuki struggled trying to find the right balance throughout the race. But I think despite that, that really was their true pace, which is a tough pill to swallow, you know, considering that they came with upgrades.
When it comes to tough pills to swallow, Williams are a bit of a rough one to try and get down. And
there's not much to report there, really, is there? Yeah. I mean, the highlight being a generous word was Albon with some squeaky bum time towards the end, but luckily managing not to crash.
Yeah,
hopefully one off the team, because they've shown good pace by their own metrics in recent times. You look at Canada for as the perfect example of that, and essentially they just needed less wind this weekend, and that would have been perfectly fine. So it's a shame, because we know that it's the field spread, but particularly in that part of the field, you either have it or you don't. And if you don't, it doesn't have to be much. You can, like they were saying, qualifying, if you just have ever so slightly going into a corner just the wrong way, then it compromises you completely. And there's a difference between first and 15th if you're not careful. And when you're fighting at the back like that, it really makes more of a difference, because you're scrounging more those points. And Williams need those points, and hopefully Austria is a track where they can dial it in a bit more, because, like I say, the one good thing about the sprint weekends for teams like this is that there's more opportunity to score points for them. We've seen Haas do that many times in sprint races, especially in Austria. So if Williams can kind of echo what they've done, then hopefully, like I say, it's just a one-off and we can have something more cheerful to talk about.
With the Albon moment was an interesting one. I think you nailed it when you said it was about the wind. I think Williams have always had a car that's sensitive to wind conditions. And as soon as Albon had that sort of squiffy moment, he was on the radio going, "What was that?" And they go, "Nothing from our end." He's like, "What do you mean nothing from your end? You can't say that without even having the time to check it." So it's possibly they knew it was the wind, or possibly there was something which we don't know about is the other half of it. But for me, with Williams, and still looked a long way off the field. And even with a chassis that's 2024 spec, Sargeant was struggling. And I was listening to the latest edition of Clem Novelak and James Harvey Blair's Clem's Wine Corner, and they called it best when they said, "I think Williams are here just giving Logan enough rope to hang himself with," which is a brutal statement from sort of F2 friends. But
people who didn't make it into F1, yeah.
But at the same time, when you look at what Williams have done with Logan at the start of this season, you look at the rumour we mentioned at the top of the show, you look at the driver market, you can't help but sort of feel it's like sizing him up for concrete shoes at this point.
I just wouldn't phrase it like that. I just see that in them giving the driver the benefit of the doubt, and yeah, proves himself where he's not in the same way they did for Latifi. It's kind of, they believe in him, they want it to work for him, and if it doesn't, it doesn't. But I wouldn't say it's them going, "Nah, you're shit, here's some rope, kill yourself," sort of thing. It's just kind of, "We would like this to work, and if it doesn't, we shall just leave. And you will go your way, we will go ours." I think it's just kind of, it's less malicious than that.
I don't think they're intending it to be malicious. I think it's more just a turn of phrase, but...
I know, there's more generous terms of phrase there, really, but...
Yeah. Possibly, but equally there is also the sort of the inner workings of motorsport, and you think about sort of, certainly from Clem's point of view, is working your way through.
I think I wouldn't mind it if it was someone who'd been in F1, if it was Rosberg or if it was Button or someone who actually, even if it was Latifi, you know, because he got a good bit of time in there. But it's always amusing when people who never even got into that category, because not because they lack the money, just because they lack the talent, make these kind of comments. I'm like, yeah, well, he's doing a better job than you would have done.
Yeah, Clem was on the podium at Le Mans.
Cool. But again, Giovinazzi won them on, so it's all kind of weird shit happened there.
Yeah, but Giovinazzi is a world-class driver, and I won't have any further discussion on that. We'll move, unless Ellie May's got something to say about Williams.
No, it was...
He's just waiting for Newey to turn up.
Yeah, waiting for Newey and Sainz to turn up. Other than that, it's absolutely horrible weekend for them. They struggled all weekend. I mean, at least Logan now has the same chassis as Alex, and neither crashed, and no one crashed into them.
This is true. Certainly after Canada, it's great that no one crashed into them. We'll move on then to Stake Sauber. Next up, Audi.
A good race by their standards.
I actually think it was a stronger weekend for the team with some glimpses of good. And importantly, they finished ahead of Williams, 1RB. Bottas finished a position lower than Ricciardo, but Joe finished ahead. And they finished ahead of an Aston Martin as well on pure pace. So
it does count if it's Stroll?
Yes, it does. it still is not quite good enough to find themselves near enough to getting a point or two, you know, if something like a late safety car or something like that came about. But I'd say overall, actually, this weekend was a step in the right direction. And I would say this is probably their best weekend yet.
I would echo that, because Bottas' P12 in qualifying was his best start since China, where he started in P10. Joe had his best qualifying of the year with P15, and he feels like that they should do better from now on because they understand the car better. And I think it was the wing he was saying that they introduced on the car in Imola. It wasn't really working for them, so they went back to basics this weekend, and immediate improvement by their own standards. So, again, maybe cautiously optimistic. It's kind of one of those things where if you get a bit, they kind of need to rely on a chaotic race or a sprint race to grab those couple of points. But again, these are the kind of positions where if you're in them and something does go wrong up ahead, then you're in the perfect place for it, because you know that you're not going to be able to get into those positions yourself, so you just need to get close to them as possible and hope for the best. And even if you can't get any points, then maybe count back counts for something towards the end of the season, and you've got to rely on that, and at least it kind of it's some kind of positive you can take there. So there's not much, but again, it feels like we've already talked more about stake between you and I, Ellie Mae, than we have done as all three of us for the entire season so far, aside from me mentioning how much I like their livery.
Yeah, certainly a step in the right direction, and no major pit stop scrubs either. So it's still a bit on the slow side, but it's steps in the right direction. They've got sort of fundamentals coming together, which if you're moving there when they change their name to Audi, I.e. Nico Hülkenberg, these are the sort of things you want to see, is the team sort of putting together the better mechanics of an F1 weekend, mechanics in the sense of sort of how it operates rather than the actual people. So yeah, it's positive signs. Meanwhile, at Haas, Timo, I'll let you say this one because my notes pretty much is echoing your sentiment.
Yeah, Hülkenberg with another. It's so frustrating because he's just driving the absolute bollocks off that car. And someone pointed out to him that it's like his fifth P11 this season. He went, did it bother you? Like, I just forget about it, to be honest. It is what it is. And on the other side of it, slam dunk for start by Magnussen. He admitted it was his fault, and it was one of those things. The car just looks like it's a bit of low drag, like the old Williams a little bit. So that's kind of causing him some issues. But again, Austria next time had they kind of do well there generally. So I'm just fingers crossed, and hopefully this isn't one of those times where Cork gets to that 10th place or the 9th place in the sprint, and it's the one time you don't actually get any points for it because it's a sprint race, and you just think, you bastards.
Yeah, I think for me, Hülkenberg is properly on it still and has a real drive, and I'm just hoping Sauber can give him a decent car next year. Knowing his luck, Haas will get good as he leaves, but we'll wait and see.
Yeah, I agree with both of you. I think Nico's pace was very strong in the first two time stints. He is able to obviously keep a Red Bull behind him. Obviously, he got that 5-second penalty for speeding in the pit lane, but he is able to fight off any threat from behind him sort of quite comfortably and unfortunately sort of keep that P11 position. But he wasn't really able to attack Ocon for P10 because, you know, he went on the hard tyres on his last stints with... didn't particularly perform for anyone, so I'll kind of just ignore that and say actually it was, a really positive week performance from him again.
I mean, you mentioned Ocon there, we'll jump towards Alpine then, and a double points weekend for them, second one on the bounce, and crucially, as an outfit, they have now outscored Ollie Bearman and they've overtaken Haas in the standings. So it's a great weekend to be an Alpine fan.
Best race of the year for them, according to Gasly, which you can't really disagree with. Both Alpines in Q3, everyone wondering how the hell that happened, and no controversy on track, which for Alpine is probably the best you can hope for.
They had a really clean weekend, good pace from both of them to get into Q3, and they stayed comfortably inside the top 10 throughout the race, even with Gasly's slow pit stop in the first pit stop. They were still able to sit comfortably in the top 10, which was nice to see from them.
I in no way think for a second that this is a sign of things to come, and I think they're just seeing how long they can pull this streak out for, but there's probably going to be some other point scoring risks for them this year. We kind of see that with a lot of the teams further down the order. They have a set number of Grand Prix each year where they're going to do well, but there's usually big gaps between those, so I wonder if Austria is the last one for them. How long before we get to see them in the points again, or does it just immediately revert back to type next weekend and it's business as usual, because RB have sorted their stuff out, and even if they don't crash, they're just outside the points in 12th and 13th or something along those lines, which is still a market improvement for them. But I don't think this is, when we're looking back and less than a few years' time, I don't think this is the 600th attempt of calling this race one of 100 for a 100 race plan.
No, I think this will be, because they're all scared of Flavio Briatore, so they will all perform because they're scared of the consequences.
Exactly. He's going to be a net good for the team. So with the teams run through, we'll jump towards our winners and spinners. And Ellie Mae, I'll let you start with your winner.
I've gone for Max Verstappen, mainly, from what we said earlier, his armour is seemingly impenetrable this weekend.
Timo?
Mercedes for me, for reasons I've also mentioned above, but not much to add on there. It's just really nice to see, and hopefully this is some momentum they can carry forward. We saw them kind of strong in this part of the year in 22 and 23 a bit, so I'm hoping that we can get something out of him. If we can have a couple of crazy races in there, who knows, maybe we can get a bit further up the grid. I don't really care how we get up there, as long as it happens at least once or twice this season. So that's kind of what you want Formula 1 to be at times, is just kind of as much as you'd love it to be on pace. If pace can only get you so far, then let's throw rain at you, or let's throw DNFs aplenty and some chaos, and let's just see what happens there and make it a feel-good factor.
Yeah, I think for me, my winner...
Let's have Spa 98.
Yeah, that'd be exciting. For me, my winner's going to be Lando Norris. I know we've been critical of him, but I think certainly that qualifying lap for me was really the thing that showed that he's got what it takes to put together a very interesting lap as well, taking some very unique lines and sort of manufacturing that time gap in a very different way to what you'd expect. It wasn't simply getting a good corner entry and good corner exit. It was about finding the shorter lines and the shorter distances between the turns, which is quite an interesting aspect of his racing ability. And I want to see that develop, and I want to see that get put to use when it comes to driving in the Grand Prix. It's all well and good becoming a George Russell Mr. Saturday. You've got to start showing that on the Sunday.
If you can convert it on the Sunday.
Yeah. So for me, it's a positive, but with a caveat of I want to see more from you still. We'll go towards our spinners then, which are certainly places where we want to see more from them. And Timo, we'll go for yours.
I've gone for Yuki Tsunoda just because, weirdly, he should be more like Esteban Ocon in Bahrain in terms of how he handles everything. He should have also been a bit more like Ricardo and go, you know what, take it on the chin, is what it is. Just accept it and not kind of throw your toys out of the pram a little bit and revert back to Yuki of yesteryear, like I was saying before. It's kind of, we got used to him evolving into, finally, character development. He's not just shouty little man on the team radio all the time. He's now got the results to prove that he's improving, and he's calmed down a bit. He's thinking things through. And this just kind of came across as a bit, he's still not there yet. And it was a kind of a frustrating, because we've seen so much good from him so far this season. So tough love approach. Do better, Yuki.
Well, no, it's the second act hurdle that the character has to overcome going to the finale third act, where they properly resolve their character. We'll wait and see how that goes. Ellie Mae, your spinner.
I've gone for Williams because they attended.
They had a very weekend. I think that's quite a fair answer. I have the same reasoning really for Aston Martin, especially a team who we really were expecting a lot better of. And yeah, just sort of wondering where that's gone. So we'll move from our winners and spinners then into our predictions. Of course, we laid these down in the preview episode. No one got pole position right. However, there were 2 points awarded to Ellie Mae for correctly predicting a Verstappen win and a Norris P2. No points are awarded for fastest lap. Timo still waiting for Carlos Sainz to bang one in. And Timo earning 1 point for his wild prediction of no retirements. And Ellie Mae earning one for double Alpine points, which...
I'm loving the fact that my only points this year come from wild predictions, which seems very me, considering all of my predictions are wild.
You correctly predicted Perez second in Saudi Arabia. That is where your other point.
I thought I got another point more recently than that.
Yeah, that was Aston Martin double points in Canada, which was a wild
prediction. That was a wild prediction.
You've got 3 points.
I didn't even realize I had a point from Saudi Arabia, so that's news to me.
Yeah.
That was how interesting that Grand Prix was.
Mm. So mixed when it comes to our predictions review.
I thought you said the other day that you were going to bring the fight to me.
Yeah, I'm trying, and I seem to have absolutely dropped the ball since then, so... Yeah.
Is this a Family Guy, Obi-Wan Kenobi lightsaber taking out moment where it's not quite working the way it used to?
Yes, yeah, it's a bit like that. Anyway, we'll move on to the Fantasy F1 review, where it's great news for me because I pulled the Limitless card, and boy, oh boy, did I fumble that as well. Really put my eggs into the Ferrari basket by picking Max Verstappen, both Ferrari drivers and both McLaren drivers. Doesn't matter though, I won this weekend. 324 points for my podcast team, JB Racing and Jaffa Cake Racing. I swapped it around a little bit with one of them to just sort of spread the bet a little bit, and that did fairly well too. But yeah, I think had I gone for Mercedes in there, it would have been a far better outcome. Beyond me, though, on the curves, P19, extra Magnifico Terrestri, P20, and follow trackside hub number 3, P37. I assume they were the lowest scorer this weekend, Timo. So
37 out of 37.
Well done to them. Overall, though, Take a Stroll still leads 2,166 points. What's the Racing Point? 2,100 points. And Noah Honga 3, 2,080 points. When it comes to our teams, Midbeds Racing, P10, Nitro RX, P16, Ellie Mae's Pod Team, P19, and The Greatest Moustache down in P37. So an interesting mix, and I think I've pulled my Limitless card now, principally because I thought it's Spain. We all know how Spain's going to go. Surely this is the safest one to make that bet on. Clearly it wasn't.
I'm deciding at the moment where to use that. Do I go Silverstone because Silverstone's always fun? Or do I do the cheesy thing of Las Vegas because it's Las Vegas? Or do I just go for what I think is going to be the dullest race for the rest of the season, in which case I'm going to have to come back and think about that, because I'm sure it's a bit of a toss-up at the moment between Zandvoort and Mexico.
I would give you one word of caution.
Don't do what you did.
No, which is, I think you get them reloaded after the second half of the season, so potentially might be worth playing it before Spa.
And check that rule.
Yeah, it would be worth checking the rule on that one, but
I've given up on mine. Yeah. I mean, two of them weren't serious anyway, just wanted to see where they would come, and, well, The Greatest Moustache is last, so
not well.
No, not well. Facial hair does not equal greatness, so maybe I'll have to change the name of The Greatest Moustache.
No, you only get one use of the chips throughout the season. There is no...
Nice try trying to bullshit me then. Not going to work.
I've come back to you with the truth, so you're fine. Anyway, we'll move on from our fantasy review to the conclusion of this week's podcast. We've pretty much crammed it all into 1 hour. So thank you very much for listening. We'll be back with a review of the first sort of few legs of the F1 Academy season in due course, as well as a preview for the Austrian Grand Prix as we head back to the Red Bull Ring. In the meantime, Timo, where can the people find you?
Once again, you can find me over on Is It Fast, where I've got my Rally Jamil series going at the moment. There's an explainer article out there at the moment, along with the first interview with one of the drivers, Carina Monte, and there'll be a second interview out later this week, so keep your eyes peeled for that one.
Ellie Mae, where can the people find you?
I don't know. You always ask me this, and I don't know. Every time, I don't get that far in advance in my life to know. I don't know, okay?
Ellie Mae will be doing things. In the meantime, if you want more from me, you can pick up the latest issue of Classic Car Weekly. That will probably be out a day after this goes live, so pick that up, and you can actually read about when Ellie Mae and I went rallying. That's all in there. Pictures, words, and all. If you want some other stuff from me, check out my social media accounts, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, at Jesse on Cars. There's bits going up on there, and the slow, ongoing rebuild process of Bridget the Midget, as I've now got an engine that is in enough component pieces, painted, ready, clean. I just need to put carburetors and manifolds back onto it. But it's coming together slowly. Maybe by the British Grand Prix, I'll have it put together and working again. Hopefully.
Oh, you won't.
Yes, I will. I don't really have much choice in the matter. I want to drive it to a friend's wedding that weekend. Anyway,
it'll break down on the way.
It won't. That's all we've got time for this weekend. We'll see you again for either some F1 Academy. If not, join us for the Austrian Grand Prix preview.